Hi everyone. Before we get started on the story, I wanted to remind you that my memoir, Both Sides of the Fire Line, is available at any of your favorite bookstores, whether it's in your neighborhood or it's Amazon. You can purchase it wherever you like. The book, Both Sides of the Fire Line, is published by Chicago Review Press, and I hope you enjoy the book. So let's get on with the story for today. Good morning, everyone. It's Bobby from BobbyOnFire.com. It's November 5th, 2021, and it seems like I have to get started on my holiday baking already, which seems really weird because I'm in Arizona right now, and it was 90 yesterday in November. I'm not happy about it. It's hotter here in November than it was where I spent the summers on my boat in July. So anyway, that's my little bit of sport bitching about the weather. Yes, John is making faces at me. So today, this story we have, well, I've got John and Anne. I should tell you that. I've got John and Anne with us today, and Reva will be back next time. She's traveling today, so she couldn't make it. But I have a story today that I think you'll find entertaining, is the point. There's a little bit of a message there, maybe not a big message, but this is mostly just for fun. But there's a leadership lesson here, and I want to make sure I emphasize that. This fire I'm going to tell you about took place, I don't know, it was around 2000, early 2000s, late 90s, somewhere in there. And it was in California. And I was a division supervisor, and if most of you remember, hopefully, the division supervisor is responsible for a segment of the fire line at a big forest fire. And so I was responsible for a section of the fire. There might have only been maybe four or five divisions on this fire, so it wasn't a giant fire, but I don't know, it might have been, 1,000 acres, a couple thousand acres or so. And on this particular fire, I had, I think I had about two or three hand crews. And the hand crews are the 20-person crews that, like a hotshot crew. But these were not hotshot crews. These were California, they call them Cal Fire, or back in those days it was CDF, inmate crews. So they were prison crews. They were prisoners who were assigned to work on the fire crews. And those crews, as I've mentioned before, some of them are really good, hardworking, and some of them, maybe mixed. So, anyway, so I had a couple of those crews, and I had some fire engines. And this was, I don't remember where it was, maybe Santa Barbara County or somewhere in that part of the world. And I had, like I said, maybe a strike team of engines, fire engines, which is five engines, and two or three hand crews. And so it was a piece of ground that was very, very steep. And it was a kind of soil that you walk on that wasn't really soil. It was mostly rock, lots of little, like gravel almost. And so in the steep country, when you step, you slid all the time. So if you're trying to climb up, it was very steep. It was very arduous working in. And it was hot as can be. And it was kind of a combination of brush and trees. So it was kind of scrubby, not a lot of big pine trees that you could be in the shade for. So my division had been really active and really busy, meaning there was a lot of fire on it. But now after a couple of days on the division, things were starting to calm down. It was a good fire, and the people running the fire, the incident management team running the fire, were people that I kind of knew a little bit. I'd been on other fires with them, but I was kind of a newcomer in California at the time, so they didn't really know me all that well, but I was, I was fitting in just fine. Now, on this fire, like I said, it had been pretty busy, and we had had lots of activity going on, lots of active firefighting. But in addition to that, what made it challenging is I had some, we'll just say, some challenging employees. Some firefighters who were difficult to supervise. I'll put that in a very polite way. There was like a, if it was a test of a fire chief test, they would give you this to see how you could do. And so these guys, they were a little bit of a challenge, but no problem. But we got the work done, and I was getting tired, and it was hot, like I said. And I was waiting. I had some parts of my division that were still active with fire, and the engines were working on that part of the fire. They were extending the hose lines, and they were fighting fire and mopping up. And one of my hand crews had been, well, both of my hand crews had been doing the same work. But when I went back to camp one night, the ops chief calls me into the incident command post and into the tent and the where they had their offices set up, and they've got maps up of the fire. And he says, "Now what about this area?" I said, "No, that's cold. Now what about this area?" "No, that's good. We're look this whole division is looking good," 'cause I'm wanting to bump forward and get to the part of the fire where there's active firefighting. I don't want to stay back where it's where the fire is kind of going out. I want to keep getting bumped forward and stay at where the active fire is. And I'm like, no, that's cold. No, this is good. I still had a little bit of fire in part of my division that we were working on. Everything was good. And he said, "Well, tomorrow, look at this. They call it an IR map, so infrared. So on forest fires, and like on structure fires too, but it's a little bit different on forest fires. They fly the fire with aircraft at night, and they pick up heat signatures, and then they put those on our maps. So the overhead, the incident management team can see on that fire exactly where the heat is." And the ops chief, the operations section chief, when he called me into the his office area in a big tent, he said, "Look, you got heat in here, and we want to get make sure there's no heat in there. So I need you to go in there and get your crews in there and pick that heat up." Now I knew where he was pointing, and it was an area that was a pretty steep, rocky scree. Real small rocks, very steep. And it was sparse vegetation. It wasn't like it was heavily treed. And it had burned. It was brush and it had burned. And there were some trees in there. And he says, "Yeah, you're going to have to send a crew or two down there and pick up that heat, because I don't want to leave this part of the fire until all the heat is out." And I thought, "Oh, God bless us. Okay, whatever. All right, fine." I say with a smile, "Sure. Okay, we'll take care of it." So in the morning, I send the engines to the part of the fire that is still active and they're still doing work. I send one of the crews to help those fire engines doing the work. And I take one of the fire crews with me up to this ridge top. Now, on this ridge top, it's pretty bare of vegetation and it's all black down below. The fire's down below the ridge top. And that heat that ops chief wanted us to take care of is down below on this really steep part of the fire. And I'm looking down there and it would be dangerous. Like, God, we're gonna send 20 person hand crew down there and risk, sprained ankles, twisted knees, for what? For some little bit of heat that's in the middle of nowhere. So the strike team leader had come with me, the strike team leader that was supervising the crews had come with me, and there was a division, or the safety officer was up there too, because everybody knew this was a little bit of a hazardous area to be. And so I said, "All right, we're looking down," and it looked like maybe according to the map that this heat might have been about a half mile off the fire line down the ridge. And I said, "I'm just going to go down there myself. I don't want to send 20 people down there for this little bit of heat. I'm going to go down there and see if I can't manage it myself. There's no sense in risking, everybody to go down." And the strike team leader said, very wisely, said, "Well, why don't I go with you? I'll go with you so you're not by yourself. So if something happens, there's two of us." Hey, good point. That's a great thing. I should have thought of that. And the two of us, I say bail off the ridge. You know, we had our gear with us, we had our tools, and we took a step off the ridge and you start sliding. Now imagine if you have this little fine gravel and it's really steep. When you step, you kind of dig your heel in with your boot, and then it would slide, you know, 2-3 feet, and then you'd lift up the other one and you'd step with your other heel and you'd slide. So within 5 minutes, we had covered the whole distance, maybe a little bit longer, but it was so fast getting down there because you were sliding all the way. And we're looking around trying to find this big heat source that showed up on the IR map. Well, we're looking around. I see a little smoke. Sure enough, I find a downed tree that still had some fire in it. Now, when I say it had a little fire in it, I mean, I don't think there was any flames. It was just smoldering inside the branches of this tree. So the strike team leader and I have our tools and we start hacking on it. And then this is how much water we needed to put the fire out. We used our canteens and we probably had a couple gallons each with us, gallon and a half or 2 gallons each. And we used our canteens and our tools hacking at the branches that were still smoldering and we put it out. That's how much effort it took. Now the fire is taken care of. The ops chief is satisfied. There's not going to be any heat on that side of the fire anymore. But we got to get out of there. So we start climbing out. Well, it's a hellacious slog of a climb because all you're doing is you take a step forward and you slide back. And then you take another step forward and you slide back. So, you know, to go 3 feet, you probably have to take 3 or 4 steps and you're going uphill and you're sliding and it was miserable hot. And finally got to the top. It took us a long time to get to the top. And the safety officer is up there watching this whole thing as we were coming out of there. And so he had cold water for us and it was all good. Okay. So we went on with the rest of the day. The rest of us went around to where the other crews were working and we joined in and we were doing our work. And back to what I would consider a normal day. Although that was pretty normal and for wildland firefighting as well. Now, about 2 o'clock, the normal routine on a wildland fire, around 2 o'clock, the operations section chief calls the division supervisor and says, "What resources do you need tomorrow? What are your needs for tomorrow?" It's kind of, you're expecting it and you're thinking about it ahead of time, but they need to know at 2 o'clock in the afternoon today to plan for what are you going to get tomorrow. So that's how far out the planning process is. And it's really more than that, but for the division soup, that's what they're seeing. Ops chief says, "Division Bravo," calling me. He says, instead of saying, "What are your needs for tomorrow?" He says, "What do you want for tomorrow?" And I pause. "What do I want for tomorrow?" I said, "What do I want or what do I need?" He was like, "Well, what do you want?" I said, "What I want," now imagine the day I've had already. I said, "What I want is ice cream. But what I need is the same resources as today. I need 2 hand crews, a strike team of engines. I need the fallers." And, you know, I gave him the list of resources that I needed for the next shift. So I don't think anything of it. I thought I was just being a cutesy and when he asked me what I wanted, and I told him ice cream. So the next, I go into camp and everything's good. And the next day, I go back out to work and we have a good shift. So the next shift is a good shift where now we've bumped forward. We've got active fire. We're fighting and that's always fun for firefighters. You don't want to be on a cold division if you can help it. You want to be where it's active. And we got bumped forward. Now we're all working together, actively fighting fires. Good shift. So because it was busy, I wait for all of my resources to get off the division and head back to camp before I leave. I want to be the last one off the division waiting for the night shift resources to come on. You do a little exchange, what's going on, and you tell the division, night shift division, what your progress is, what your plan was, and then they take over for night, and you do the same thing in the morning. Well, that night when I got into camp, it was about maybe, it wasn't terribly late. It might have been 7:30 or so. And the normal routine, you get into camp, I'm driving my command rig, and I'm going to park someplace, and then I'll go over and find the ops chief and the situation unit leader, and I'm going to debrief and show them where we are now, what the status of the fire is on our division. On my division, we did this, and this is how far we put line in. You know, you give them the whole rundown. But before, as I was pulling into camp, now I didn't know a lot of these people really well, but they knew me. You know, I was probably the only female division soup on the fire, probably the only person female op in ops on that whole fire, and supervisor, that is. And so when as I'm coming into camp, I hear, "Hey, Bobby!" I hear people yelling, "Hey, Bobby!" And then I see people holding up like these, like a cup, a big cup, like a quart or a pint cup size thing. And everybody is, "Hey, Bobby!" And I'm like, what is everybody doing, you know? And I go to park, and I start walking towards the incident command, you know, the office area of the camp. And everybody is holding up Ben and Jerry's. Everybody's got a Ben and Jerry's in their hand, holding it up, going, "Hey, right on! Good job!" And I'm like, what the heck? And so when I walked in to find ops, he said, "Did you have dinner? Did you have your ice cream?" I said, "What? No." He said, "Yeah, everybody gets a Ben and Jerry's." And I said, "Oh, for criminy's sake." I said, "Forget dinner. I'm not having dinner. I'm having ice cream, because if I have dinner, I won't have room for a pint of Ben and Jerry's." So I did the debrief, but I went and got my ice cream, and I walked around camp enjoying my Ben and Jerry's, smiling, everybody's smiling. Now, that was really cool. That's the only time I ever said I wanted ice cream on a fire, and then the next day, the ice cream shows up. But now, think about, that was a leadership decision that incident commander had to approve, because you can't buy just show up with a truck, a Schwann's truck, full. You know, there must have been 500 people on that fire. Well, it's not exactly within the purchasing rules to buy 500 Ben and Jerry pints. And so if there's an incident business person listening to the story, leave me a comment, because I know that they would frown on that. You know, the people who are in charge of counting the pennies on these fires, and we spend a lot of pennies. There are no cheap fires anymore. And so I loved that the incident commander said, "You know what? It's been hot. It's been stinky. You know, these guys have been working hard. We're going to buy them ice cream." So that was quite a leadership point, I think, for that incident commander. Now, like I said, you know, that could have been something that he could have gotten in trouble for, you know, because we already had caterers there. They were already providing all the food and all that sort of thing. And there might have been some food that went to waste that night. Well, firefighters probably ate their dinner and Ben and Jerry's. Some of us, like me, you know, who aren't really doing that much work, I couldn't do both. But I thought I was very impressed that the incident commander stepped out and really did that. It was a morale boost. He was doing it, and I talk a lot on these stories about boosting morale and developing esprit de corps. So I thought that was really, really cool on his part. I love that. And then, you know, for me, you know, if you listen to these stories very often, you know I'm a bit of a smart aleck, and I like to joke around. And I, of course, always think my jokes are hilarious, regardless of what other people might think. I think they're funny. I may be the only one laughing, but so then the other question is, when is it okay to joke around? Well,
If you are seen in your workplace as being competent and good at your job, I think that gives you a little bit more leeway to joke around a little bit. If you don't know the people that you're dealing with, and maybe you haven't developed the reputation that you need yet, your stock value isn't particularly high, maybe that's not the time to make a joke. Because, I don't know, maybe some of the people heard, when they heard me say, what do I want? What I want is ice cream. You know, some of the people probably rolled their eyes and said, what a jerk, what an idiot, she shouldn't have ever said that. And maybe I shouldn't have. But I think in the end, it really was effective. I mean, because the incident commander who approved the purchase of all this ice cream, I think the whole thing turned out to be very positive for everyone on the fire. And so when you have an opportunity or when you're presented as a leader with that opportunity to step out, weigh that carefully. Are you going to step out and you're going to get in trouble for it? Are you going to step out and improve morale? How big of a risk is it to you and your job and your career? You know, I don't know. The incident commander could have got a poor evaluation on that fire because of that kind of a purchase. I don't know. But I can tell you that it was appreciated by all the firefighters working in that heat. And so I gave him a lot of credit and still love that story. So for all you leaders out there, think about when those opportunities come along to help the folks or to, you know, weigh it out. What's the risk? What's the risk analysis you're going to do by stepping out and doing something like that for your employees? John and Ann, anything you want to add? Nope. I see head shaking.
Nope. I'm on my way to the kitchen right now for ice cream.
Very good. Very good. All right, everyone. I hope you have a great day. I hope you enjoyed the story, and please share with your friends. Thanks very much.